Welcome to NFL Total Access, the locker room. I'm Michael Robinson alongside Mike Garofolo. Jeezy, what's going down, big dog?
What's going down is whoever was lined up across from Anthony Munoz. He was putting them on their back, pancaking them. And this is a guy, look, growing up, you know, we're going to get into this with him. We didn't have the analytics and all this stuff. And I don't know that we really knew specifically who was playing really well at offensive line, but you knew Anthony Munoz was one of the all-time greats and was a great that you were watching week in and week out playing for the Cincinnati Bengals. And you, we just talked about it once we wrapped the interview with him offline. You could just sense this guy. You know he's a great just by his presence here. And you're gonna hear that in the interview. I don't even have to tease anything specific because the entire interview, you get that from him.
Yeah, he's on from the time we introduced him. His locker room story was off the chain. I mean, this guy literally defined the tackle position for the modern game. You guys don't want to miss it. Check it out. Jeezy, we got a good one today, man. You know, when I first saw him, when he came up on the, you know, on the video chat, I called him the man, the myth, the legend. One of the guys that should be on the Mount Rushmore of the National Football League. Anthony Munoz, welcome to the podcast, big dog.
Gentlemen, thank you. It's great being with you. Yeah, I appreciate those kind words. Thank you.
Oh, man, they're more than kind words. It's the truth, Anthony. So, look, now the price of admission to the Total Access, the Locker Room podcast is a locker room story. So we start off every single podcast with a locker room story. And, again, I would also encourage you, leave it all out there, man. Don't worry. Nobody listens.
Okay.
Just go ahead and say anything you want.
This happened my rookie year. So my rookie year, Cincinnati drafts me. They'd hired a head coach, Forrest Gregg, who played for Vince Lombardi. Anyone knows anything about Vince Lombardi, man? The guy was tough. Forrest Gregg, disciplinarian, 6'5", 250 when he was coaching, had that southern draw, southern twitch. Yeah. And, I mean, he gained the respect right away. He came to a football team that had been 4-10, 4-12 2 years in a row. So, you know, I'm pretty focused when I'm playing, and I'm intense, but I like to keep things loose. I mean, I like to keep my teammates loose. But and that allows me to play with great intensity. So my rookie year was a preseason game. I said, okay, these guys are a little too uptight. You know, this NFL thing, they're taking it too serious. So I found, you know, remember the big hip pads?
Yeah.
You know, that they used to wear? So I grabbed one of those. I'm not a very good artist, but I drew a face on the hip pad. So I said, it's all about timing. We went out to warm up. We came back in. I'd always sit at the first locker by the door. When we'd get up, go out, preseason game, I looked around. I said, man, okay, timing. So nobody's looking. I put that hip pad in my between my helmet and face mask, you know. Uh-huh. So there was a face in there. So I said, okay. So they called everybody up. And I said, okay, it's time. I put the helmet on. And I couldn't see anything because that face was there. I started yelling, okay, guys, put your game face on. Nobody laughed. This is pretty funny. I said, come on, put your game face on. We got to get out there and play this. And I'm sitting on the seat, and I'm thinking, wait, something's got to be wrong. Well, I could see the floor below me, and I saw a size 15 shoe. So I pull my helmet off, and I go from that 15 shoe up to about 6'4", 6'5". It was Forrest Gregg standing right in front of me. That's why nobody was laughing. And my offensive line coach, who was about 5'9", is standing right behind him, kind of shaking his head. I thought to myself, I said, okay, I better go out there and have a great game. I said, yeah. I guess this NFL stuff, you can't loosen the guys up that well, man. Come on, man, you got to loosen up. So that was my introduction to the NFL, and I felt, okay, well, I'm going to let the guys motivate themselves, do what they need to do, and I'm going to do what I need to do.
Whoa, Anthony, hold up, man. So you are a rookie. In a preseason game, you hadn't even been in the locker room for amount of months yet.
Not even a month.
And you were cool enough in your own skin to go out there and do a joke like that before a preseason game? Oh,
you know
my
what?
Goodness.
Guys were just – we had a couple guys that would throw up, and I'm thinking, what is the deal? You know, coming from USC, every game was big, but you just went out there and you tried to physically dominate, but you had to be loose. So, yeah, I was like, okay, I'm a number one pick. I got to check this out. Maybe, you know, I can lead these guys to loosen up, play a lot better that way. Yeah. So I was a rookie, no more than 2-3 weeks with the team. But when you got the big 6'5", 250 Vince Lombardi proteges sitting in front of you, not many guys are going to laugh. So I learned quickly. It's just like, okay, let's go out and just play the game, I guess.
Oh man, that's a great early lesson. But you know what? I love the fact you talked about the guys throwing up. Who do we just have? Oh, Morton Anderson was on the podcast, Mike Raab. Yeah. Talked about that they had a player that would throw up every single game. And if he didn't throw up, they got nervous because they had that was part of their routine to hear him throw up. So were you that way throughout your career, just kind of loose and cool and, hey, we're going out to play a game and let's see what happens?
You know, when I was on the field warming up, man, I was lasered in, focused. I'd come in. I had to relax. I had to get loose. And then once I hit the field, it was like, you know, don't have me, you know, don't extend your hand to me to help you get off the field because I'm not going to do that.
There you go.
Don't bump in as a teammate. Don't bump into me in the huddle because I don't like that. So it was just, but I mean, I was just like, but yeah, I was a guy that once I was on the sideline, I had to take a knee and watch the defense play and just get my mind going for the next series. I didn't like sitting in the bench. You know, a lot of guys sit on the bench between series and just look at pictures. I said, I have my adjustment. I know what they're doing. The coach has gone through it. Now let's just go out and play. But yeah, I've always been that way. The looser I am, the more intense I could be.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Because Anthony, I don't think I learned that principle until I was almost out of the National Football League. I probably should have learned that a little bit earlier in my career. But you were a two-sport player out of USC. I got to get your thoughts on Lincoln Riley. Like, what are your thoughts on him coming to that school? What's your thoughts, big dog?
Well, you know, it's pretty exciting. I've been up in Canton, like I told you. I was up here Sunday. So Sunday night, we had like a watch party at the hall. Franco Harris and I were watching the Steelers-Bengals game. Had a great time. I get to the hotel, and all of a sudden, social media is going crazy. I'm hearing that we've hired Lincoln Kennedy or Lincoln Riley.
Lincoln Riley.
So my phone rings, and it's Marcus Allen. And I said, man, what's going on? You would have thought Marcus was 8 years old. It was Christmas morning. He just starts talking about this guy's accomplishment. Do you understand what we just got? Do you know what's going to – and, you know, so he got me more excited than I already was. And, you know, never saw that coming. You know, I think they mentioned it in the press conference. There was probably about 45 of us that the search form talked to. I spent like 45 minutes on the phone just giving my feedback. And, you know, when the guy asked me, well, what in your mind, what coaches would you come – and his name, Lincoln Riley, never even crossed my mind. But the fact that what he's done, his age, I am so excited. I mean, I tell you what, they talk about the biggest hire since Howard Jones back in the, you know, I wasn't playing for Howard Jones. That's right before I was there. But, you know, the exciting thing is, you know, when I was there in Pete, we used to lock down California. And the fact that as soon as he became the head coach, you had the number one quarterback in California decommitting to Oklahoma. You had two stud running backs decommit. I'm just thinking, how many more kids is he going to have decommit and all of a sudden join the Trojan family? So to me, not only a great coach, but a great recruiter. So you can imagine how excited I am. You know, I've been out of there forever and ever, long time, but I still bleed Cardinal and gold. I still watch a lot of the games. I usually get back to one or two a year. So I'm pretty excited about the hire.
You know, look, when I think about college football, I love when storied programs are good. I mean, when they're not good, it feels kind of weird. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when Alabama wasn't good. I mean, it was between two eras when they were, but all of a sudden the program comes back and you say, yeah, this is right. This is how it should be. So hopefully for all of college football's sake, but certainly for the USC alums like yourself, Lincoln Riley leads USC back to the promised land.
I agree.
That does transition into what I want to ask you about, which is Southern California kid all your life, third overall pick of the Bengals in 1980, and then you land in the Midwest. Had you been there before? Was that culture shock for you to end up there?
Let's see. My sophomore year, we played in Purdue, West Lafayette.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's it. So no, I'd never been in the Midwest. Baseball being my first love as a kid, Saturday morning baseball, the Big Red Machine, since I kind of felt like I knew where it was because the stadium was on the river. But no, I'd never been there. And it was somewhat of a shock when I first got here. You know, growing up in Southern California, going to USC, 21 years, all of a sudden I'm 21 in Cincinnati, Ohio, looking around thinking, you know, not bad, but where's my Mexican food, man? My mom's homemade tortillas, no salsa. I mean, I'm thinking, okay, how am I going to do this? It's going to be expensive getting that sent out every week. But they embraced my wife and I quickly. We started a family and just fell in love with it. You know, people are like, how do you handle the winter? I'm saying, I don't mind the winter. I mean, I'm not crazy about it, but I don't mind it. It's that summer humidity that they keep saying, you're going to get used to it. You're going to get, and I'm thinking 40 years, I'm not used to it. But no, it's, we fell in love with it. It's home, and it's still nice to visit back west, but this is home now. So it didn't take long for us to adapt and to really fall in love with Cincinnati.
Oh, okay. Well, to follow up on that one, the Freezer Bowl had to be shocking for you. I mean, 1981 AFC Championship game, Chargers versus Bengals. It was 9 below zero. I don't think I've ever encountered that weather before in my life. Okay. Take us through that experience, man, because I know it had to be something you'll never forget.
Well, Rob, first you say 9 below. Let's add the wind chill. The official was 59 below. Now, think about that.
What?
2 years out of USC. The only game I played my senior year was the Rose Bowl, January 1st, and it was 82 degrees. Now you're talking 2 years later, 59 below, and I'm thinking – people are saying, well, you guys in Cincinnati are used to it. I'm saying, yeah, I didn't grow up in a freezer. Or, you know, it's like, but man, it was the crazy thing about it is we woke up, opened the curtains, it's blue skies, the sun's out, and I'm thinking, what a great day for football. And all of a sudden, my car sat in the parking lot of the hotel for like 2-3 days. It wouldn't turn over. Thank God they had the van, the hotel van running, and we jumped in the hotel van, and I'm thinking, I have never, ever felt anything this cold. And to be asked to go out and play a football game, the only reason I said, okay, I can do this, the winner goes to the Super Bowl. But man, I tell you, it was painfully cold. Painfully cold. And you know the cartoons where it's cold and they hit each other and then all of a sudden from head to toe they start cracking? That's how I felt the first play that I hit that Charger defensive end. But it was like, don't take your helmet off because your pads are going to get rock hard. Put tape on your ear holes. You don't want that wind. And my mustache was white from not from my age like now, but it was white from frost. The inner part of the face mask had frost in it. It was just crazy cold.
Did anybody get any frostbite or any frozen toes type stories? Because I've been in locker rooms where that stuff has happened.
I think our defensive end had an ear that got frozen. Other than that, I think the Chargers played like they all had frostbite, but that's okay. No, we had a couple guys that still feel the, you know, we talk to them now as old guys. And I think that still feel that little effect of the, you know, a little frostbite during that game. Oh. But, man, I'm thankful that not more guys, you know, the sad thing about it is, you know, fans, they start tipping a few and they think, you know, we lost a couple fans to exposure because they drink, you know, they were drinking so much, they pulled their tops off and guys are – and they died of hypothermia exposure. Yeah, but it was nothing like. But like I said, blue sky, sunny outside, and then all of a sudden you walk outside and you're like, holy smokes!
Wow, and you guys went sleeveless. The offensive line went sleeveless that game, if I'm not mistaken.
You know what, guys? You're crazy enough to play in that weather? Go sleeveless. You know it's funny because we get the question all the time. Hey, now you guys did that to have a psychological edge, right? I'm thinking, come on now, you're talking to, you know, Anthony Munoz, sure. But then when it's all said and done, we didn't do it for a psychological edge. We did it because with sleeves, the defensive linemen, right, have more to grab. So we said, sleeveless. The funny thing is the 5 starters, we decided to do it. The 3 backups say, well, we're not playing, so we don't have to go sleeveless. We went, nah, you're part of the group. We all go sleeveless. But, so we did that. It was great T-shirt. We don't have that fancy Under Armour or Nike. Yeah. It was a great T-shirt, shoulder pads, and your jersey. That was it.
I remember covering the NFC Championship game in Lambeau in January 2008. Michael Strahan leading up to that. Because everybody all week, we're not going to wear sleeves. We're not going to wear sleeves. We're going to be tougher than them. And Strahan said, I'm going to have sleeves. I'm going to have gloves. I'm going to be the warmest guy out there. You guys can do whatever you want to do for your psychological edge, but my muscles are going to be the warmest on the field. I thought, you know what? I kind of like that philosophy, and stuff is skin tight these days that they can't grab it anyway. So I guess maybe that's the difference now.
One last thing about that game.
Yeah.
The pre-game warm-up, which was very short, we noticed 2 San Diego Chargers that were sleeveless. So we went into the locker room, 2, during pre-game warm-up. We went back in the locker room. We remembered their numbers. We said, when we come out for the game, let's find them and see how many layers they have on. So we came out. We looked. There they are. They were bundled up. They were layered up. They had the Michael Strahan philosophy. Yeah.
I love it. Well, but listen, I just got back from Washington, the Seahawks, Washington. I was low 40s, right? And I'm standing on the sideline. Granted, I'm not moving. I get that. But I'm thinking to myself, the last thing I want to do right now, because I'm cold at 40-degree weather, is run into another grown human being. But those guys out there, they were flying around, and you get those cold games now. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, you get the question, are the players today softer than the players back at – I don't think so, but you tell me. I mean, you compare the eras. Could guys today play the way that you guys did back then?
Well, I'm asked that question a lot. They say, can you have played now? Can they have played then? I think the guys are great athletes now, so I believe they can adapt. The one thing, I always turn it around when they ask me, do you think you could play now? I said, do you think the guys now could play when we were playing with our rules? With
our rules. Right.
I mean, I think about, okay, so UCLA recruited me as a nose tackle. Everybody else is an op. I said, I don't think I want to be a defensive lineman because I know what we can do to defensive linemen. So that's my question. With the rules, I mean, you can't blindside a guy. You can't hit him too hard if he's not looking. I tell you what, those are blocks you look for because you wanted those guys on the sideline saying, who hit me? Yep. Was it a truck or was it a running back? You see, so that I think that makes for great fodder. I think it's a great question. I think guys – here's a question or a thought. I've gotten to know Dick Butkus. Doug Atkins, who passed away, University 6'7", but they're only like 250, 260. Take those guys, put them into these days and give them the supplements.
They could play.
And the weight training. So Dick Butkus, I was talking to Dick Butkus, 51, middle linebacker, and he started lifting only his last 2 years. And he goes, Anthony, he goes, I fell in love with lifting. He said, I honestly believe if I would have lifted my entire career, I might have killed somebody.
And he probably believes that for real. Like,
I tell you what, but it's, you know, because they're so big structured and big hand. Now you put all that, you know, bulk from the weight training and supplements. So yeah, that's a great question. I mean, there's no question guys today in most positions are bigger, stronger, faster, but a lot of times in my humble opinion, they might be bigger, stronger, faster, but you take a guy that's more technically sound.
Yep.
I think the technical, this is my humble opinion, sometimes the technique is not as good as it should be because I think the coaches see these guys that they're so athletic and let them go. Just let them play instead of, I mean, great line from a great tag from Frank Pollock, who's the line coach today for the Bengals. And this was basically the way we thought is he says, you have to master the mundane. And it's all about technique, man. I'll take a guy that's so technically sound, knows leverage, knows where to go every play, has it up here, knows the scheme, compared to a guy that's just crazy athletic, but he's not that disciplined with his technique and not real sure at times where he's going. I'll take the guy that's fundamentally sound and he's strategically sound. So it makes for a good question.
Anthony, I agree with you. I would take the same fundamentally sound player over a genetically dominant guy, any day. And at the end of the day, what's happening is coaching is not coaching these guys. Because what's happening is coaches, especially on the younger levels, high school and, you know, some of the younger college groups, they just want the genetically dominant guys to make themselves look good so they don't have to coach, right? But going back to something we talked about before we went live on the podcast, you said you were in Canton. You talked about you were up there coaching. Could you just kind of get into that and tell everybody what you're doing in Canton and the relationship that you have with the NFL alumni?
Yeah, long story bearable. It started because so many guys were getting put on injured reserve in the NFL last year, I think, or year before last, over 500 guys. So the NFL here, but NFL alumni and the Hall of Fame brokered a deal last year and said, why don't we start an academy? Let's start with three positions, O-line, D-line, running backs. We'll bring in former NFL coaches, strength and conditioning coaches, nutritionists, and we'll have them live up here, and we'll train them 5 days a week. So let's say somebody gets hurt with the Seahawks or the Bengals.
Yeah.
We have a running back that's ready to go or a lineman that's ready to go. So these guys are up here cutting the last cut, maybe with a team or two, and they got cut, rehabbing an injury. So we have like Mike Tice, coach, O-line head coach in the NFL. We have, Chuck Smith, who played in the NFL, comes and helps out. We have Mo Williams, a running back that played in the NFL. Jay Hayes, D-line coach, coach of the Bengals, coach of the Buccaneers. These guys are up here in the classroom going through strategy, going through blocking schemes, putting the guys on the board, making them diagram like we had to do in camp. And then you take them out in the field for an hour, hour and a half. You just work all technique, man. Technique, technique, technique. And then they have a little lunch. Then the rest of the afternoon is strength and conditioning, stretching. So these guys are in shape, and they're learning everything they need to. So my son, who now works at the Hall of Fame Village, brokered the deal, helped broker the deal with the NFL alumni. So he told me about it when it was first starting last year. And he said, Dad, would you be interested in coming up and coaching? And I love coaching. Never got into it full time, but I've coached high school for 3 years. I've been to 6-7 professional camps. I coach. So I said, I'd love to. So this is my second year coming up. And just working with these guys, you can imagine, these guys are basically auditioning, trying to get ready for a job. So everything you're teaching them, man, they're like sponges. They're working their tails off. And it's fun to see the progress with some of these guys as you've been with them 2, 3, 4 weeks. And so that's what we're doing up here in Canton. It ends at the end of this month. And, you know, what better place than where football started to hopefully have these guys start their NFL career by getting signed with an NFL team.
That's so dope. Now, do the agents pay for it? Is it something that the NFL just does for them? How's it paid for?
That's a great question. So the team here, the coaches, the people that are running, have great connections. The guy, Dean Dalton, he spent a lot of years with the Vikings. So recommendations from agents and from teams, what happens, they take care of it at the back end. These guys come up here, and they're just worried about working out, getting ready with – and the staff here wants these guys to sign a contract, then the players, the agents will take care of it on the backside. So hopefully a week, a month, they sign, they get on a roster, they get paid, and then they take care of it.
That's pretty cool, man.
Love that. Anthony, Walter Payton, Man of the Year finalist will be announced next Tuesday. That is an honor you received back in 1991. Yeah. Tell us what that award meant to you. You had plenty of on-field accolades, but that is a very distinguished honor that is bestowed on only a few NFL players over the course of their career. So tell us about winning that back in 91.
No, that's great. The Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year is phenomenal. First of all, you look at the guy that the name on the trophy, Walter Payton, Hall of Fame football player, but what he did in the community. And that's the key. Sure, who you are as a football player has something to do with it, but more so what you mean in the community, what you've done with your family. And those are the things that I share with young men and women, man, when I'm talking to them. It's, you know, you can be the best running back. You can be the best DB, the best offensive lineman, hopefully. But it's what you do off the field, who you take care of, and, you know, who you are as a person of character. Because, again, we talked about the fundamentally sound. I'll take a guy that is amazingly a character guy because he's going to have work ethic. He's going to be loyal. He's going to be trustworthy. And he's going to know what responsibility is all about. So, to be a former recipient of the Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year is an honor. It's very humbling because it talks about who you are more than just a football player. And that's one of the things that I love doing with young people, and especially my foundation, is really attacking the whole person, not just who you are as an athlete, but who you are socially, academically, you know, in the whole work. So that means a lot. And, you know, what was it, 3-4 years ago, we had a chance. They brought a bunch of the winners back to the Super Bowl. We had a chance to just hang out and, awesome. You know, guys that played before me, guys that I played with, and even guys that played after me. So it was a great connection of a lot of the former winners.
Yeah. And GZ, like, this isn't just something he did in 1991 back in the day, right? He's still giving back to the community. Anthony, tell us about the Anthony Munoz Foundation. Yeah. Heard you had a shoe giving, thing last year. Just talk about what you're doing in the community right now.
Yeah, it's in fact, this is the 20th anniversary, our 20th anniversary for the Anthony Munoz Foundation. And to, you know, my mission statement, to engage the tri-state area to impact kids mentally, physically, and spiritually. We have 7 programs. The shoe giving thing is just kind of an offshoot of our programs. Like, all those kids are part of our mentoring program. So we have a elementary mentoring program. We have that goes K-5. They age out in 5th grade, so then we continue in junior high. We have overnight character camps where we do in the spring and the fall. And we teach them a little football. We got to do that. Yeah. But most of it is character, team building, and just, you know, really bringing kids of different colors, different socioeconomic backgrounds, and teaching them we need to work together. One of the things that we learn through football, man, doesn't matter what you look like, where you're from, you got to work together. And that's what we need. And we've been doing that. We have two types of scholarships. We have 18, one time, $2,000 to $5,000. Then we have our big scholarship fund where we give a $20,000 scholarship.
Wow.
For our 20th anniversary this year, we gave the 18, wow, two to five. Then we gave out 19, $20,000 scholarships. Man. And then we have our youth leadership seminar. We bring in, usually it's 85 to 90 high schools. Coming out of COVID, we had 45, about 700 students. We bring them together. We have motivational leadership speakers. We have breakout sessions, so we bring in moderators to lead those breakout sessions, topics that high school kids usually don't talk about. So we have that. And then at the end of the day, we send them out. We challenge them. We have our community service challenge. They put together community service projects. We track them and give them some money to, and some of the programs that these young men and women come up with, man, they initiate them. Their moderator helps them with it. And, you know, so that's what we do. And like I said, this is our 20th anniversary. Usually anywhere from 25 to 3,000 students that we work with a year. And I'm thankful because COVID last year, coming out of it, this is probably one of our best years in the last half dozen years. So for an old guy that, you know, played a long time ago, it still motivates me, still, you know, incentive to you know, because I'm there full time. I don't take a penny. They call me the senior intern, which I'm fine with. And, so I'm the development guy knocking on doors and raising money, which, you know, because I share the story and it's a passion of mine. So that's our foundation. Like I said, this is our 20th anniversary. We've raised probably close to $20 million. And, you know, one of the first things corporations always ask, so what's your percentage? You know, because they want to know how much you give. And I'm pretty sure there's a watchdog nationally that says if you give 60 cents to the dollar, that's pretty good. I said, nah, if I blocked the guy 6 out of 10 times, I wasn't going to last very long. I said,
nope.
I want it to be 9 or over. I want a 90%. So we've averaged through our audits anywhere from 89 to 92 cents a dollar going to the kids. So, you know, it's something that we love doing. I have a great board, 3 full-time staff, which I know I ask a lot of them, but we have 4 to 8 local college students that intern with us. So they're getting a chance to learn, to work. So it's something that's, you know, my wife and I spend a lot of time and, you know, so it's a great community. It's been, you know, I tell people at one time, 13 years, I was on a smaller team. Now I'm on a real big team and that's this whole area.
That's so dope, man.
It's great that we got to get your thoughts on the Bengals, but before we do that, you hit on something I wanted to ask you about because that sounded like the analytics of your foundation there, the 9 out of 10 times. Right. As far as the blocking on the field and getting the dollar, you didn't have, and you had grades, your coaches would grade you back, but you never had the analytics
every week.
Yeah. But so that was your form of analytics. You look at today and say, boy, I'd love to be able to see what my Pro Football Focus grade would have been or all that. I mean, what are your thoughts on the new age style?
No, because my line coach, Jim McNally, they should hire Jim McNally now because our walls in our meeting room had as many analytics as you wanted. I mean, he had onside, backside. You see, and it wasn't just a grade for blocking or not blocking your guy. We had grades for, did you do the technique correctly? How good was it? So, yeah, I mean, if we didn't have Jim McNally, I would say maybe my buddy Chris Collinsworth, his company, Football Focus, I might have needed that. But, no, we had Jim McNally who – and you had to look at it every single meeting. So, if you had a bad game, you'd go, I don't want to see those grades, you know. Yeah. So, that was the incentive. That was the incentive of playing well every week is that you had to look at those grades and your line mates. But, you know, I think that's still pretty cool to know that. But, yeah, for me personally, I'd say Jim McNally is as good as it gets.
Hey, Jeezy, did you see him light up? Did you see him light up talking about his coach?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That's what a coach had an impact on this man when he was playing. That's what I'm talking about, man. That's what it's
guys,
about.
And I look at this. 4 years at SC. Now, and Rob, okay, you're going to – 4 years at SC, 13 with the Bengals, 2 line coaches.
Two. Your whole college and pro career.
Hudson Hauk in college, who eventually went to the NFL for over 30 years, one of the best. Mm-hmm. Jim McNally, all 13 with the Bengals, one of the best to ever do it. Two.
Oh, man. Dude.
That's why I
talk
about
that. To have that
type
of consistency like that, you don't get that in the National Football League.
Exactly. You know, I mean, that's why I knew you. Yeah. You're like, whoa, goodness. Yeah.
Yeah, you gave me chills, man. That's pretty dope.
Hey, talking about your Bengals days, mentioning Chris Collinsworth, let's now flip it to the 2021 Bengals. Yeah. It's a really interesting team to me. Started out hot, hit a bit of a lull, then came back and thumped the Steelers, the Ravens about a month or a month and a half ago, whatever it was. So not just winning games in the division, winning them big. Yeah. Your thoughts on this 21 Bengals team and what they could do down the stretch here?
So the one word that I right away when I think is consistency. If they can be, stay healthy and be consistent. You know, people say same old Bengals. I say no. 3 years ago when Zach Taylor came into now, I think they have less than 10% of the players he had when he got the team. Oh. This is a whole new team. What they've done in the offseason, D-line, linebackers, secondary, through the draft, they're changing the culture. Last year, six of the seven draft picks, captains. Three of them, two-time captains. One of them, T. Higgins, he goes back for a senior year. He's the captain. You know, they bring Mike Hilton in, veteran from the Steelers. They bring guys that have been to the playoffs. They bring in, you know, Riley Reiff, 10-year guy from the Vikings. So they've made up. So the main thing is consistency, a big question mark, and it continue to be. And they're playing much better as the offensive line. Skill guys, I mean, Ja'Marr Chase, you know, Higgins, Boyd. You got some good tight ends, C.J. Uzama, Joe Mixon. But then on the D-line, you got Hendrickson, great offseason pickup. Sam Hubbard, then you got Logan Smith, I mean, and Jermaine Pratt. Those guys can run as linebackers, but then you got some secondary people they brought in. So consistency is the one word, I think, and we know this last month, that's what it's all about. It's not how you start, it's not the lull, but it's how you keep your foot on the pedal and you finish strong. And I think they have the pieces to do that, but, you know, young guys here and there, they can't read and believe what they read. They're going to have to go out and step it up because this division, man, it doesn't matter what Pittsburgh's done or what they're doing. You know, they're going to be tough in December. The Ravens and then the Browns, they're the same way, up and down. But they're a very talented football team. So I think they've put the pieces in place. They brought back a couple coaches that excited me. I mentioned one earlier. Frank Pollock was here 3 years ago. Joe Mixon had his best year rushing the football. Yeah. He left. Zach brought in another guy. They realized, So they brought Frank back in. Look what they're doing at the running game. And he's a technical – he excites me because he's technically sound, but he's not afraid to get in your face. And I think even nowadays, you need a coach that's going to get in your face.
Absolutely, man. And what I love about the Cincinnati Bengals is they have a physical nature about them now that I didn't see in the previous years. But, Anthony, I can't thank you enough for stopping by today, man. This was awesome. You got to come back, okay? You got to come back. You got to figure out
a way to come back. Don't hesitate. Get a hold of me, and I'll do it. You know where to get a hold of me now. This has been a blast. As you can tell, I'm pretty excited when I talk football and foundation. And anytime, like I said, don't hesitate. Love to be back with you guys. You guys do a great job.
Thank you so much, Anthony. And that'll do it for this week's episode of Total Access to Locker Room. For more insight with the Locker Room point of view, check out the latest episodes every Wednesday and Friday on Apple and Spotify.